Time for the 49ers Rush Podcast. And here's your host, John Chapman.
What is going on, faithful? It is Thursday, which means it's time for the coach approach, which means I am here with the handsome man himself, Ant from 49ers Cutback. How are we doing, my friend?
We're doing great. We're right in the middle of the offseason. We know what the schedule is now. We're almost to the June 1, right, date, so we're going to get some things post-June 1. Don't want to say on June 1. People come after you for saying that. It's post-June 1, so June 2nd. I just want to make that clear so that way we don't have any issues. But, yeah, stuff is going to be coming up. Hopefully some conclusions to, you know, some Brandon Ayuk stuff. Maybe the 49ers will make another signing when they free up some more money. It could be interesting. I'm really excited to see these guys get on the field and what they can do when they get out to training camp. Because I think the 49ers got a lot of tools that Kyle Shanahan's looking forward to kind of using. And, plus, there's so many players with upside. Let's see what they can do. You know, I listened to a little bit of your show last night with Larry, and you guys are talking about the rookies and what they could be. And I'm like, ooh, Jaden Duggar, you know, he's so much upside. Efficient price hawk. Like, I'm excited about the 49ers.
It is funny you brought up post June 1. So everything kind of goes off this 4 p.m. Eastern time slot for the NFL. That's like the official start for almost everything. And there's going to be some changes. Like there are changes just contractually. One, the 49ers use that post-June 1 contract language in a lot of the contracts that they do, void years, whatever else, like just the way that it works. So there will be some change. And the current 91 roster is not going to be the same throughout this offseason. There's going to be some change. I don't think there's going to be a lot of change. I don't even think Brandon Ayuk's getting cut. Like, I think that they are just going to just shrug their shoulders and just wait, because he's not even technically on the roster because he hasn't reported. So, like, they don't have to make a decision. They just get to kind of wait. So I do think that there will be some change / turnover. Now, one of the first topics that I have, shout out to my man Jared S. He asked this question. If the 49ers decide to add a player, whether that's edge, offensive line, tight end, safety, whatever, would they make this move prior to OTAs? Or do they wait till post-June 1, or is it even further than that? So you talked about the roster with this high upside, right? Which I'm kind of under the impression they want to see what they have first. I do think additions will be made at some point for sure. I don't think any additions are taking place anytime soon, personally.
I don't think they have to, you know, and I think when you look at the veterans that they would add, especially with all the conversation about edge players, right? Joey Bosa, Jadeveon Clowney, like these guys that are extreme vet, they don't want to show up right now. They don't want to be a part of the offseason workouts. They don't want to be a part of mini camp. Closer to training camp is where they want to show up. And for most of them, probably after the first week of training camp, they want to show up. So I do think that the 49ers are going to be looking to add somebody possibly if things don't look good. Now, if the guys that they have look good, they're going to wait this thing out. But I think it's probably going to be a little bit further along. But you're right. Every single year, there's a lot of roster movement, especially even in training camp. I don't know how many times I was standing in line waiting for the bus, and all of a sudden there's another roster signing, another movement, player getting moved on from. So it's just going to happen. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, we're doing our 91 roster countdown series, which is so fun every year. But it's like, you know, we do all this work and then somebody gets cut and replaced. And it's like, well, you literally just like trash this whole section of work and then institute another one. And then, like, let's say somebody gets cut that we're already past. Right. So now it's not a 91 series. Now it's a 92 series. Because you got, like, you can't delete what happened in the past. So it's always fun. And, like, I like people getting new jobs, but you get attached to these players, even like back end roster guys, where it's just like, man, I really wanted to see what this guy could do. And you've got guys like Derek Canteen and Larry Worth III, who are rookie tryout guys that are still on this roster. And it's like meritocracy still wins the day. Like, whoever earns it, you know, old gridiron, whatever. But at some point, the cream rises to the crop, to the top. I could do the Macho Man Randy Savage.
Yeah.
I love it. And so talent wins the day. There's no doubt about that. But I do love what these back end of the roster guys bring. And this contract, this season, maybe a little bit more so than in the past, because this roster is so much more competitive than what we've seen in the past two seasons. I really don't think it's like, a couple questions I have outlined for you today. Like, dude, how the hell is this wide receiver room going to shake out? You're cutting some quality draft picks or players or people who have been paid. Like, who's safe, who's not, what that looks like. And that doesn't even make room for undrafted free agents or priority free agents or longtime NFL vets that step up and, you know, earn their spot. This offseason is going to be crazy because there are going to be some crazy roster moves. We're always upset by one or two of them. We're going to be upset by five or six of these roster moves whenever it comes down to cut down time. So I don't know. Are you struggling this offseason with like just getting clear pictures of what rooms are going to look like, position rooms are going to look like in the future?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I've been going through them. That's one of the things I've been doing on my episodes is kind of going through each room and just talking the depth chart. And I did wide receivers yesterday, and it was like, when you got to a certain point, I think there were conversations about Ricky Pearsall and Stribling and Kirk, you know, maybe who plays more. I think those are still not that hard to figure out. But I thought once I got to like DeMarcus Robinson and Jacob Cowing and Jordan Watkins, it was like, holy cow, who exactly is ahead and how's this thing going to play out? Because you got the upside, right, of the young guys who are 4-3 guys. You got Jacob Cowing who plays in the slot, can play a Z. He's got a lot of ability in open space. And then you look over at some of the other guys, you know, you got Jordan Watkins who can play X receiver. So that's a lot of value there. But then there's DeMarcus Robinson, who's a vet that can play all three positions. And you're like, you know, I seen Matt Barrows had said DeMarcus Robinson was left out of his 53-man roster
that's
projection.
That's crazy to me.
I'm like, how? Like, this dude is so good. Kyle loves this guy. He's good in the red zone. I don't really understand how you get there.
Guaranteed. He's got $2 million guaranteed dollars, which is way more than almost anybody else in that wide receiver room he's competing with. He's got like three void years. Like,
I know. I don't think they're moving on from. I think it comes down to Cowing and Watkins there, you know, and whoever's best on special teams. But I think that that's a fun conversation because you're kind of getting, you know, different. I mean, you got Mayoko saying Carver Willis is going to start. You got Matt Barrow saying DeMarcus Robinson's on his way out. And I just think you look at this roster and John, how lucky are we now to look at this roster compared to last year where everything was easy to figure out? And now you look at it and you're like, this team is restacked, reloaded. You know, I guess John Lynch said recalibrate last year. It's stockpiled now. They got talent all over the place, except for maybe a couple positions where they still have question marks.
Well, let's stick with this because your episode yesterday and the wide receivers, let's just stick with this and let's, okay. First question. They've kept five in the past, but sometimes they keep six wide receivers. It seems like this is six wide receiver year. Would you agree with that? Like, would you, if you had a bet right now, five or six that they keep on the initial 53?
It's going to be six, and I will leave out a wild card that it's seven, knowing Kyle Shanahan. I mean, it was just a couple years ago, he went seven, and I know that they've got to figure out the roster. They've got to figure out how to have three quarterbacks this year. They got all these offensive linemen. But make no mistake, if they are keeping one less tight end, which I think they might if George Kittle starts on the PUP list, there's a chance. I think it's going to be six, but there is a chance that they could go seven and then try to figure out how someone gets to the IR or something like that after the 53-man roster initially comes through. They always do this with veterans too. You know, you always talk about the handshake deals. Hey, we'll see you down the line, you know, in a day or so. And you come in, we kick you an extra nickel or so. So I think that that could happen, but I do think it's going to be six.
Okay. I want to play a game. Ant has had no time to prepare for this. So let's grant him some grace. This is all me, my wrongdoing. I want a percentage. We're going to go through each wide receiver, and I want you to give me a percentage that you think off the cuff of if they will make the 53-man roster, okay? So we'll start easy. Mike Evans.
100%.
Ricky Pearsall.
100%.
Okay. Deshaun Stribling.
100%.
Okay. Christian Kirk.
100%.
100%. 100%
in.
Yeah. He's got like two point something guaranteed.
I just think that he's the insurance policy in case Ricky Pearsall's not ready to go. Right. Or Pearsall's hurt or something. You just plug Christian Kirk in. He's good to go. So, yeah, I'm with it 100%.
All right. DeMarcus Robinson.
33%. Yeah.
Whoa. So you're taking Matt Barrows saying he ain't going to make it.
I think he's in the competition. I do. I think
33%.
I'm going to.
Whoa.
I would normally say that I think that it's a higher rate. I would probably put it at like 60%, but I think there is some belief that Watkins and Cowing, if they could show up, could make it difficult for DeMarcus Robinson, because DeMarcus Robinson, you have under contract for 1 year. And with Jacob Cowing and Jordan Watkins, for Watkins, there's 3 years. For Cowing, there's two more. And I get there's going to be a lot of
concern. I don't think last year accrued for Cowing, did it? I don't think it did.
Oh, you're right. It might be three years for Cowing.
Yeah, so like I think you got both of them for 3 years because Cowing never made the active roster once.
Yeah,
did he? Am I wrong there?
I don't think he did. Yeah, I think they carried him right to the 53, and then they put him on the IR, I believe, is what they did.
Right.
Yes.
Whole mess. Okay. Well, all right then. 33. That is a shocker. I'm cutting this clip. I'm just telling you right now. I'm going to tag Matt Barrows. Shout out to a friend of the show, Matt Barrows. Jordan Watkins, what percentage are you going to put on him?
33%.
Oh, I see what you're doing here.
Yeah.
And Jacob Cowan.
33%.
Damn you, Ant. And your rationale of making sense. No way. So you're not even going to give a slight advantage to any three of these.
I think from a coaching standpoint, I would naturally give DeMarcus Robinson an advantage because he's going to come in, know the system. He's a veteran that knows everything to do. The other guys haven't proven anything. But I think from a roster building point of view, a holistic view, you have to take into account these two guys are going to help on special teams. They're young and they're 4-3 speed guys. So these are people that the 49ers have invested in. And DeMarcus Robinson might be here next year. He might not. The other two, they could be here. So when looking at it that way, I think that's where I get that thought process. If you're talking best player, DeMarcus Robinson right now is the best player, and it's not close.
This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel, pick up the kids, they're out of school, adventure, it's all out there. For others, juggling it can be tough and can lead to being overwhelmed and counting down the minutes until the kids are back in school. And many worry they're wasting their days of sunshine. Well, therapy can help better understand their needs, feel more confident about setting boundaries, create a version of summer that actually feels good. And with over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally. And it works. Their average rating is 4.9 out of 5 for live sessions based on over 1.7 million client reviews. BetterHelp therapists work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the United States. And they do all the initial matching work with you for the therapist. Short questionnaire helps identify your needs, your preferences, and over 12 years of experience in the industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right the first time. But if you're not happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time from all of the tailored recommendations. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy, sign up, and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com. Yeah, I agree. So, like, do you want now or do you want the future? Yeah, every single free agency signing screams, it's now. Now is the time. But you got to balance that somehow. What's up, Rusty? Glad to see you here, brother. Glad to see you here. Okay. Wow, that's crazy. Let's go with the Malik Turner. Do you think that there's any chance ultimate special teams blocker plays all three spots?
No, I don't think so. I think he's going to be a practice squad potential guy.
Well, somebody has to have it. Okay, what about Wesley Grimes or Will Pauling? Just tell me which one has a better chance just out of those two, the two priority free agents.
I'm going to go Wesley Grimes. I think you got the size and athleticism to go with it, so I'm going to say Wesley Grimes.
Oh, man. That's crazy talk, man. And, ooh, dude, that is – I'm shocked with the 33%. Man, that is – all right. I like it. Right here, Seabass says they're going to run some double flanker sets. Kyle Shanahan's never ran a four wide receiver set since he's been here. Not one time. Do you think it's time? I don't think he's going to.
I called for it. I think it was a couple years ago that I called for it, right when they got Ricky Pearsall. I'm like, hey, they could go to some four wide receiver sets. Started getting all the, you know, the thoughts of Mike Holmgren in my head from 1989. It's like, hey, they're getting way too much pressure. Let's just spread them out. Four wide receivers. I think there's always a possibility. I think that George Kittle being out could force their hand a little bit, but I still think Kyle Shanahan will put Jake Tonjes out there. I don't know exactly what it's going to take. Maybe it's the Seattle defense, the way that it's currently built, with Nick Amendola, you know, playing that big nickel. Maybe they do want to find some looks that matches up Mike Evans on Nick Amendola, or, you know, somebody that could put some real pressure. Because as good as Amendola is, he's not a corner. He's a really good safety. And so getting him in matchups where he can lose in space, I think is going to be something the 49ers look for. Because right now they believe they've neutralized the advantage of Kyle Juszczyk having Nick Amendola out there. They think that he's the Juszczyk of the defense. And so they believe now that the 49ers 21 personnel can't be as effective. So what does Kyle Shanahan do to counter that? Well, you get a lot of speed. That's another reason why Jacob Cowing and Jordan Watkins are in the mix with Stribling. Those guys are all speed guys who can threaten people vertically. And that puts Nick Amendola. I know he's super fast, but turning and running with those hips, with those wide receivers, is a lot more difficult than people think. So just because he's 4-3 straight line, don't mean he's going to be able to run with those guys when they're running their routes.
And yeah, and I remember Kyle Shanahan whenever he was on the Super Bowl, like pre-coverage, right? And he was talking about Seattle's defense, and he's like, if you can't force them out of that shell, like, you have to force them to come up and stop the run game. And if you can't do that, then you're in trouble. The 49ers were not able to do that in those two late season matchups, you know, week 18 and then the divisional round where they got blown out. Like, that was the issue. And man, I natural segue here. The title of the show, at least on my end, 49ers transitioning into a pass heavy offense. This is kind of what I want to talk about. Last year, the 49ers threw the ball 574 times. That was up 64% from how much they threw the ball in 2024, which was 349 times. So over 225 more pass attempts. Then you look at the offseason, they add not one, not two, not three, but five brand new wide receivers. And I also want to throw in the lack of running game. Last year, 3.8 yards per carry. Ranked 30th in the NFL, by far the worst ever in the Kyle Shanahan era. So my question, are the 49ers going to transition into more of a pass-heavy offense moving forward? Does this look like, not that they're abandoning the running game, but is it going to be another 550 pass attempt season where the 49ers are throwing the ball way more than they're running it?
I think some of it depends on situational, you know, the games, how things are going, if they're playing from in front or behind. I think if they're playing in the front, they're going to try to lean on the running game a little bit. They're still investing in that running game with draft picks, Jordan James, you know, Kalen Black. So they're still doing that. They're trying to find the answers along the offensive line. But I do believe that early on in the season, I think a lot of teams are going to do the same things that they're trying to do. They're going to force the 49ers to prove that they can run the ball consistently. And for the 49ers, that might be, hey, let's throw the ball. Let's get these guys to back up. They need to put some pressure on these safeties and these defenses that are trying to crowd the line of scrimmage and just allow this offense to kind of take off. You know, the stat came out yesterday, Brock Purdy, you know, one of the best deep throwers as far as accuracy. We all knew that. And so if you have opportunities, you add Mike Evans, you add Deshaun Stribling, guys who can get vertical, even Christian Kirk does it pretty consistently. All of a sudden now, you get those safeties to back up. You get the defense to play a little bit more vertical than horizontal, and then you can start finding some avenues to get players the football down the field. So I think that that will really help the running game. So I wouldn't be shocked if it looks a little lopsided early in the season where the 49ers are relying on the passing game a lot more to open things up. And then eventually, as defenses start settling into worrying about the 49ers passing attack, the run game starts taking off. That will also allow some continuity with this offensive line to kind of get together and get some things going. So I think it could balance out a little bit, but I do believe it's going to be more pass heavy over the whole season compared to what it has been in the past, where they've really leaned on the run game just because of some of the looks they're going to get from defenses.
So the run game was a mess all of last year. I remember we were at the Giants game, which was one of the best run games of the year. A lot of that was because Jake Brindle wasn't playing, but I was getting heckled from Giants fans in the stadium at MetLife. They're like, oh, what? Is Christian McCaffrey now at 2.8 yards per carry? Like every single time after like he had a decent run and actually turned out, I'm friends with these guys and we still text all the time. But they were awesome. The best of the freaking East Coast fans are awful, but the good ones are the best ones. I will say that. Now, will the run game improve? If I set the over-under at 4.1 yards per rush attempt, which is the second worst in Kyle Shanahan's tenure with the 49ers, 2017, they averaged 4.1. Last year, 3.8. If I said 4.1 yards per carry on the year, over, under, or push? Like, where do you see that?
I think it's going to end up being over. I think that it's going to settle over because of the weapons that they've added and some of the looks that they're going to give. I think they're going to give them some, you know, some more 11 personnel and try to get some big bodies on some of these smaller nickel corners and take advantage of some of those matchups. I think that you're going to see a more creative run game this year. I think that they really are going to lean into that. So I think that it's going to go over. I think last year definitely didn't work out, but I think they're going to find stability. They've added at least a lot of pieces along the offensive line that you expect one of those guys to kind of hit at the guard position and kind of revitalize this run game a little bit. They got to get some push up front. Pooney being healthy will be big. I think Trent Williams being healthy will help him. Having a full training camp as well will always be good. And so I do think that it's going to take a step up. I'm not saying it's going to go up a big margin, but I think a little bit it definitely will. And I think as the season goes on, I think this run game is going to get better and better because I do think they'll get into a rhythm with Jordan James and Kalen Black getting a few carries here and there and kind of taking a little bit of the load off of Christian McCaffrey.
I like that. The guard position is going to be key. You had Ben Bartsch, you had, you know, Burford, you had getting a solid run presence there. Now, can Robert Jones do that? I think Connor Colby can. I think that's kind of where he excels. And then the Carver Willis love that is coming across, you know, all of social media right now. He's great in the run game. The problem with Carver Willis is, man, that pass pro is inconsistent at best, and he's never played inside. His anchor is inconsistent at best, never played inside. What that looks like scares me a little bit. Shout out to Rusty in the chat. He says those G-Men fans were great. Jets fans too. Yeah, we had a good time up there. There's no doubt about that. Now right here, shout out to my man Kimbrough in the super chat. He's the best of the best. I love this. Thank you, man, for your generosity. And just support all the time, dude. Kimbrough's just quality dude. He says, I agree with the speed being a problem for opposing defenses. Makes me think that if Pearsall stays healthy, he is going to have a big year due to the lack of attention. Talk to me about Ricky Pearsall and what he has to gain with the addition of Evans, Stribling, Kirk, how that benefits him compared to last year. Juwan Jennings is awesome. A threat downfield he is not, nor has he ever been. So how do you see Ricky Pearsall just this year with the complementary pieces of the wide receiver room and how that benefits him?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen Kyle Shanahan's offense, you know, and everyone can remember Debo screaming across the middle on these dig routes coming across and making these catches and getting these extra yards. And we've seen it a couple of times from Pearsall last year, but he wasn't able to finish. You know, he's not really got the home run speed. But those are the types of things that Kyle Shanahan wants in his offense. But defenses have been able to kind of sit on those. Number one, they brought their safeties up because they didn't worry about Juwan Jennings. They didn't worry about anyone going vertical over the top. They didn't really treat any of those through routes as, you know, danger to them. So they were kind of just chilling. And then they would also just rotate one of those guys into that position to take away the deep dig right there with that lurk position. So
yes, like that. And sorry. I got to jump in right here because I think one of the things in the Kirk Cousins interview, I don't know if you saw that, where he talked about it, he's like, you know, used to you just, okay, single high, double high. And at the snap, you would know. He's like, what Seattle and Mike McDonald's doing that's different is they give you a double high safety look. And at the snap, they sit for a count and then rotate into that down area. So that then that safety rotates down to take away the dig or whatever else, because there's no deep look. And so they give you that too high look for the first count. So you're having to make a read pre-snap, and then you're going to have to make a read post-snap because they're delaying giving you the read. This is the new NFL. And so it's not as simple as too high, single high at the snap. That's going to give us our read. No. There's pre-read snap And then there's post-read snap. And Seattle is confusing quarterbacks because of that. Now, when they play the 49ers, they give that too high shell. And so it's like, oh, can't take off the top. And then they rotate and take away the dig. So they're getting the best of both worlds. And so now, sorry for the rude interruption. I'm terrible at that. Keep doing what you're doing because I agree with you, and this is the problem.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. I mean, that's exactly what Mike McDonald's defense was doing, and that's what teams were doing to the 49ers, and that's why they could constrict the running game because they were sitting on those plays underneath, but they were also taking away those deep crossers. The Kyle Shanahan staples were being taken away because the way defenses were able to play against this offense. So getting speed is one of the main objectives for the 49ers offseason. That's why getting a guy like Stribling that has that 4-3 speed, well, guess what? Now if he's an inside receiver and he runs that vertical and those safeties are sitting flat-footed in the middle of the field, they're waiting half a tick, he runs right by him, and you see these big explosive plays down the field. So just getting those safeties to back up 2 or 3 yards is going to open up those dig routes, you know, for Ricky Pearsall across the middle. That's going to be a big play for him. But also some of those vertical routes where they take a chance underneath and you have something deep down the field. So Mike Evans is going to be a presence because you have to take him seriously. You put him one-on-one with the corner, he can win with size. He's also got sneaky speed where he can still get over the top and stack these corners. You got Stribling that adds the speed. Christian Kirk, who's really good at finding open lanes and places to sit down. And so I think all these guys in totality help Ricky Pearsall's game, and I look for there to be space for him over the middle of the field. Once they establish, they have to establish it, that they can win vertical. Once they do and they stretch this field vertical, then Kyle Shanahan takes advantage of them horizontally because then he starts giving space, and that's what he wants to do with Ricky Pearsall.
You got to get everything uncluttered in the middle of the field. That's where Brock Purdy's just so dangerous. How do you do that? You got to stretch the field vertically outside by the numbers. You do that, they have to have a safety or corner over the top. That opens perimeter run game, digs. Everything is now open. But whenever, and this has been the problem, you lost those last year. And whenever you never had that, that's where it got into trouble. And shout out to Logan. He says, you know, I hope not. We're not good at being a one-dimensional team. And here's one of my favorite clips from George Kittle. If it plays.
And us being a one-dimensional football team isn't very good.
That's how things were. That clip's from 3 years ago. I'm not so sure, and I don't think I'm suggesting the 49ers become, you know, a one-dimensional football team. But, man, you look at the 49ers last year and just the sheer number of pass attempts, they were top 10 in pass attempts. They're throwing the ball. I think that this is going to continue. And whenever you're having such, like, this is the difference between Brock Purdy and Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know if I want to say difference between Brock Purdy and Mac Jones, but the explosives come at a different speed when Brock Purdy is your quarterback. Like, you could talk about lack of arm strength. You could talk about how small he is or whatever. I don't care. Explosives is what Brock Purdy does. The dude is a greedy SOB, and I mean that in the kindest, most positive way possible. That dude goes for the jugular. And even in the Seattle Seahawks game where they got blown out, I don't think that he had a bad game. He was just playing by himself. Ricky Pearsall had zero catches on 40-plus snaps. Couldn't run the ball. Nobody was catching the ball. There were times where he would go to throw it to a wide-open Luke tight end, whatever you want to say, and pull the ball down and then start scrambling because he's like, I can't throw it to Stonehands. Like, that dude was out there by himself against one of the best defenses. I argue the second best defense in the NFL behind only the Texans. Hopefully they take a couple steps back this year, but I don't know. Whenever I see the moves that this front office and coaching staff have made this offseason, it really does seem to suggest they're going through the air much more than what we're used to seeing, Ant.
It definitely could, and I think this could be a direct correlation to what Seattle did defensively, right? I mean, one of the first things that you got to do is you got to beat the teams that you're going to be playing twice a year. So you look at the Rams, you look at the Seahawks, what do we got to do to beat those teams? Right now, Arizona's in a complete rebuilding phase, so you don't really have to worry about them as much, but you have to figure out how to overcome Seattle. That's the first obstacle. How do we do that? And one of the ways that you do that is you make it difficult for them to do what they want to do well, and you can't just line up with the 21 personnel anymore and load up and run the ball. because they do have Nick Emmanuel. And even if you go back to week one last year when Emmanuel got hurt, that's when the 49ers were able to kind of get their offense rolling a little bit. He got hurt early in that game, but you could see him filling in the hole. He's a difference maker. So how do you neutralize that? Well, we're going to spread you out a little bit. We're going to get more speed on the field, and we're going to make it more difficult for you in those cases. But also, we believe that we can get a matchup that we like in the passing game, but in the running game. And I wonder how many times we're going to see Christian McCaffrey this year. I know he hasn't done it a lot in San Francisco, running single back looks. I think there could be some opportunities for the 49ers to run him in some single back looks to get some different variants to this running game. And I think that that could be something interesting to add on top of the what they're already going to kind of change up offensively.
Ooh, 11 personnel. If it's Jake Tonchis, I'm in. If it's Luke Farrell, I'm out. I'm done. Now we don't see 20 personnel either. Like no tight ends, excuse me, but Kyle Juszczyk and CMC back there. I'm cool with that. And I understand a lot of people talk about how Juice is basically a tight end. I get that, but not necessarily because they don't use him the same way. Sometimes he does similar things. And I love Kyle Juszczyk, and I think he's coming off one of his best seasons of his entire career. Like, I think he's been awesome. But I think you want to keep him at that kind of 20 to 25 snaps a game. Whenever you go back to 2024 tape and he was playing 40 to 45 snaps a game, you saw, like, okay, the efficiency is out, the consistency is out. Like, it just was not beneficial to the offense. So I am curious kind of to see what that'll look like because – something's got to change with Kittle out. And Kittle will be out for several games. Like, I get that everybody's like, yeah, Kittle's going to be back week one. Yeah, this is fun. I'm not so sure on that. Yeah, like, do you think Kittle plays week three?
I don't think we see Kittle for the first four games. I think he's going to be out. I think that they'll, you know, after that, they'll reassess. But this is one of those things where you're playing the long game, right? You've got to have Kittle for the stretch run. You've got to have him for where you think you're going to go. Make no mistake, this roster, this team, they think that they are Super Bowl contenders. They think that they are going to raise the Lombardi Trophy in February. That's their whole entire goal. It's not to win the first four games. They want to win them, but that's not the most important. The most important is to win at the end. So I think they're going to work him in. That's why I think they're going to carry two tight ends early on in the 53-man roster, and then I think they'll probably elevate somebody for game day. I think that that's going to be the plan, and that's why going to more wide receivers, a different type of look early on in the season is going to be beneficial for the 49ers. I think that that's something they could do. Expect Kittle. I mean, he could come back maybe when they play Seattle the first time. I think it's probably more realistic that's a little bit later than that, but I think that right now the 49ers know that there's life without Kittle for the beginning parts of the season. I think that's why it was important to get the wide receivers and guys that can make plays in space.
Yeah. And hopefully, I like this from Logan, Khalil Dinkins. Like, if there's one guy that I could say, like, I wish he dominated and earned a spot, it'd be Khalil Dinkins. Like, that tight end room and that safety room, which we've got a comment we're going to get to about the safety room here in a little bit. But if you're going to any game this season, you got to come party with us. 49ersRushRoadTrip.com. 49ers Rush Road Trip is going into its sixth year with over 40 events at road games. If you are traveling to see the 49ers play this year, you got to come party with us. And on top of that, we give games, trivia, giveaways. We've partnered with TickPick this year. All you have to do is search 49ers Rush on any of the TickPick sites, apps, you name it. And on top of all of that, best dressed, giveaways, autographed jerseys, kids are always included, and get in for free with a ticketed adult. And a lot of times for select cities, we will have 49ers legends come out and you get to meet and greet them and get autographed. Navarro Bowman, Frank Gore, Patrick Willis, Fred Warner are all players that we have worked with in the past. And trust me, if you want to build the 49ers community, you're traveling by yourself, we got you covered. 49ersRushRoadTrip.com. All right, let's flip it to the defensive side of the ball. We have dominated offensive programming today. Offense sells tickets. It's what it is. Chicks dig the long ball. Anyway, NH Niners. He says, I know you aren't big on Jair Brown. Another content creator I follow says, Brown's better than he gets credit for. A lot of time he looks bad trying to make up for Mustafa. What do you think here? Love the question. Love the dialogue. And let me just say this. Whenever we go into what, I don't like being negative on players, period. But disagreements are a great thing. And having different perspectives is not a negative. And having this dialogue can be a positive. And the goal, my goal is not to convince you one way or another. My goal is to watch the tape and just say what I see consistently. Like that's how I see things. So, Ant, how do you respond to questions like this? Shout out to NH Niners. Wonderful question. What's your approach here?
Yeah, I think that there's different perspectives. You know, people see things differently. I would say that there's too much inconsistency with Jair Brown. And Jair Brown misses tackles. He takes bad angles. He does those sorts of things. He also has some mishaps in coverage. But, I mean, the truth is Malik Mustafa didn't have the best season either. I think a lot of that was he came in late. He was coming off the ACL. I don't think that he was, you know, really ready to roll. But there was a communication problem as well at the back end. You know, we talked about this a little bit last week, is they just don't communicate well. And that's why you see some of the confusion and some of the mistakes. But Jair Brown, he made mistakes. And I think that that is, it's been clear and evident. I think that he's got to get a lot better. I think Malik Mustafa knows he's got to play better than he did last year. And then Marquis Siegel, the same thing. He's got to finish plays. And so I think that there's a lot of, you know, blame that could go around for that position in general. And I think that they need all those guys to play better. But no, I don't think Jair Brown is just getting a bad rap because he was covering for Malik Mustafa. I think that there are moments where he tried to cover for Malik Mustafa. I think there's moments Malik Mustafa was trying to cover for Jair Brown. These guys were trying to help each other, but ultimately they were just inconsistent in where they were supposed to be and finishing. Lots of missed tackles, lots of bad angles. They got to get better with that. And they got to pull the trigger a little bit quicker. That's one thing that I noticed from all of them. They're a little bit too flat-footed. They don't drive on the football the way I want. There were plays over the middle of the field. They could have finished. They could have got there in time and got the ball knocked away. Just weren't able to do it because they're a half a click too slow reading the play and making the play.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like a lot of times the safeties don't really – they communicate together, but they don't really play off of each other very often. Corners and safeties interact more, linebackers and safeties interact more instead of this safety. Like it doesn't really work that way in this defense, but Mustafa definitely had issues, but nowhere near Brown. Like I think Marquis Siegel was much more consistent. He just doesn't have the ceiling of Brown. Jair Brown's been really bad for back-to-back years, in my opinion. He's had one or two games. I still remember laughing out loud when the 49ers official channel was putting out Pro Bowl, vote for Jair Brown Pro Bowl. And I just laughed. I was just like, what the hell is this? Like, you got to be kidding me. But he sees himself that way. And I like the way that Jair Brown sees himself. Like, I want that high-end confidence, goldfish memory, you know, whatever. But this is the guy that's given up the most touchdowns through the air in back-to-back seasons, even though he didn't even start all the games. You look at his missed tackle rate. You look at, and even outside of the missed tackle rate, there are so many plays where he doesn't even register a missed tackle because his angle is so bad he doesn't even make contact. Can't even tackle him in flag football. Now, he does have ball skills. Yeah, he did have an interception in the Super Bowl. Yeah, he was great under Wilkes. Maybe that returns with the coaching staff now with Raheem Morris and Jerry Gray as the DB coach. That is huge. I would like nothing more than to be wrong on Jair Brown and Jake Brendel. I want nothing more than them to have the best seasons of their career. But if we're looking back, Mustafa hands, head and feet, head and shoulders better, I think is the way it's supposed to go, than Jair Brown. I don't even think it's close. Now, the improved defensive line rush, that will help the safeties. It will. That will not help the safeties in run game. That will not help the safeties in missed tackle rates. That does not. It does affect getting beat deep because the ball should come out faster. I do agree there. But man, like you see Jair Brown get beat across the front of his face on a slant route in the red zone. That pass rush ain't going to help that. Like, you can't have them break in front of your face. You just can't do that. So there's just so much to me whenever I watch 27 play that just says man, that ain't it. Like, yeah, like that's not it. So I think you have more hope than I do. Obi-Wan, you're our only hope. Like, am I crazy? I am crazy, but like, make me feel better about Jair Brown. Let me ask you, can you do that, Ant? Can you make me feel better about number 27?
I think there's always a hope that, right, when you get some sort of a change in philosophy defensively, a little bit, and it's not going to be a stark change because they're sticking with what Robert Saleh has already started to build here. I mean, that's been one of the things that's been consistent. But we have seen when a different guy comes in from a different tree, the secondary can change a little bit, and some of the expectations, even some of the techniques that they teach, Wilkes had some things that were different. Those things definitely helped out Jair Brown. Now it's Raheem Morris's job and Coach Gray's job to go in and say, hey, these are the things that are going to benefit these are going to benefit Jair Brown. We got to put him in the best situations to be successful. I think that the thing with Jair is he shows moments where he comes flying up and he lights somebody up at the line of scrimmage. Yes. You're like, holy cow, this dude's a monster. Or he makes a play where he gets an interception. You're like, yes, this is the Jair Brown we want. It's so hit and miss. And if he could make more hits than misses, I think then he can turn into a good football player that the 49ers could count on. But right now, that consistency hasn't happened. And maybe it's the change in coordinators. Maybe that has been a problem. Maybe it was the injury before the season last year. I don't know that for sure. But I do think the 49ers invested in Marquis Siegel for a reason. And I think that they're ensuring themselves that, hey, we got somebody that can step in and make some plays. And I think Siegel's going to get a run. Jair Brown is going to be tested this offseason with Marquis Siegel, especially now that he's been in the system for a full year.
Yeah, and adding to that, Ben, how much does the return of Fred Warner help the safeties? We've talked about this before. Like, Raheem Morris has more experience in the Tampa 2 system than he does any other system. I really hope we do a lot of Tampa 2 with Fred Warner back, personally. Like, that would be, if I was the defensive coordinator, that's what I would run. I'd run a lot of Tampa 2, which they do under Saleh, under Sorensen, under, like, Wilkes. They've done Tampa 2 as changeups. But Raheem runs a little bit more Tampa 2. I would like more of that. And, yeah, Warner helps out. He's the greatest coverage linebacker in the history of the NFL. I'm going to keep saying that until he catches on. He's that damn good. He helps out way more in coverage than I think even, you know, I don't want to say more than the pass rush, but the communication, getting everybody right, you don't have to worry about that anymore. Now, we've got this awesome question from my man Big Pop. Appreciate you, buddy. Any chance you guys could come up with a show on the idea of these three tight end sets, the Rams run and the Seahawks run? And this is the new NFL thing. Every team in the NFL, you look at that run on tight ends in the second round, nobody saw coming. You're seeing the Jags taking Nate Borkichter, however you say his name. Like, that was a shock. Everybody talk about Deshaun Stribling. That's even more of a reach. Niners haven't drafted a tight end in 2 years. They haven't signed a tight end. They just Kittle, whatever. How do the 49ers respond to these two tight ends or three tight end sets, this 13 personnel that's going through the NFL? What's the answer there?
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw the NFL shift to a wide open game, right? They kind of mirrored college football. Let's get all the speed out on the field. And so what teams started doing was, let's get faster at linebacker. Let's get faster at nickel. Let's overall team speed. So you got lighter safeties. You got lighter linebackers. And so what's the counter to that? Well, let's get three tight ends on the field where they're bigger and they can block these linebackers. They can block these nickel corners. And so what do you do? Well, you get guys like Marquis Siegel. And I know that was a guy that, you know, maybe we don't know exactly who he could be, but he's a guy that can step up and be physical at the line of scrimmage. And we saw it. They tried it last year with him on Terrence Ferguson early on in the season, and he was matched up perfectly. Having those safeties who can kind of turn and run is something that you need. Now, what the 49ers also did was address it a couple of different ways. One, in free agency with Nate Hobbs. Now you have a big nickel corner that can step in and play physically. 6'1", which means he can match up with most tight ends in the league. Then you draft Ephesians Pryslak as well. You know, 6'3", 200 pounds, really big and long. And so what you've done is you've added to the guys who can cover those guys. But it's not done there. You've also started adding guys like Jaden Duggar. You have a guy like Nick Martin. You bring back Dre Greenlaw. And all of a sudden, you have guys who can match up with these big physical tight ends in the run game, but also still stick with them and cover. So the 49ers are definitely going that way to be able to defend 13 personnel while also giving themselves versatility to give 3-4 looks and do a lot of different things. So they're becoming more multiple on defense, but I do think that they're addressing that look. And it's funny because on offense, I think Kyle Shanahan's going a completely different way and saying that 13 personnel thing, that's not going to last. You give it like a year or two and they're going to move on to something else. And he's already moving on to something else.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll argue probably the worst game last year defensively was that first the matchup against the Rams. McVay took him to the woodshed. Like, it was embarrassing. And a lot of it was 13 personnel. Like, he just could not adjust appropriately to what was happening out there. And it was bad. Now, you got the win, the 26-23. The second game, you got smoked. And then right after the Rams game, when that's like the halfway point through the season, that's when they started doing that 13 personnel. Robert Saleh never in-game adjust. The very next game was the Arizona Cardinals. Still didn't adjust after the first quarter. And then after halftime, came out and figured it out. And so, like, they were just behind the eight ball. And this is kind of the Robert Saleh paradox, is that he's so simplified schematically that everybody knows what they're supposed to do. The adjustments to new stuff take Saleh some time. I'm just going to be very, very honest. Like, that is a negative to kind of Robert Saleh. Now, right here, shout out to Phil Berto. What is Raheem known for on his teams? Improved coverage, better tackling. What improvements will he see? Versatile approaches. That is what Raheem Morris has been known for. 3-4, 4-3, base, Tampa 2, penetrating style, fire zones. This guy is a chameleon whenever it comes to defensive scheme, and he can fit whatever. He's even coached on offense. Way back in his time with the Falcons, when Kyle Shanahan was the OC, he says, I want him to coach on the offensive side to figure this out. Like, Raheem Morris is known for adapting the scheme to fit his personnel probably better than anything. And he's as positive of a human being or a coach that anybody's been around. Like, he brings the vibes. He is just such a good dude. What would you add to this question by Phil Berto on what Raheem Morris is known for?
Also generating pass rush. I think when you look at what he's done with his defense is they generate a lot of pass rush, you know, whether that was bringing in the right personnel or just, you know, finding ways to get guys after the quarterback. And I think that that's one of the things that the defenses really need to do is pre-snap to post-snap. That is what Seattle did so well. Hey, we're going to give you a look pre-snap, and then post-snap, it's going to change and make the quarterback have to figure things out. Raheem Morris does that because you don't know exactly what you're going to get. But he's trying to get the most versatile personnel he can get, so you can't even get a tell by what the personnel is. That's why I think somebody like Nick Martin could end up being very important for this 49ers defense this year. If he's a guy that can come up to the line of scrimmage and play that 4-3 over type role and bring pressure off the outside where you get a 3-4 look, and he has got so much speed to get off the ball, a little hybrid role, but then still be able to play Sam linebacker and match up with tight ends. That's going to be one of the most unique things, is how much better has Nick Martin gotten coverage? Because it was rough last year watching his footwork and training camp and everything, but he's had time to work on it. And let's see where he's at, because he's an extreme athlete. If the 49ers can get those athletes on the field, you know, three safety looks, some of these three linebacker looks where everybody can cover, I think they can kind of neutralize that 13 personnel. But I think that's one thing Raheem Morris is going to bring, is an attitude to get after the quarterback. And I think the 49ers desperately need that.
Look at this question from Kimbro. How much more does Morris blitz? Now, a blitz is constituted by bringing five or more players, right? The Falcons were second in the NFL last year with 209 blitzes. The 49ers were fourth to the bottom with 116. So you're talking a difference of 90 more blitz plays. Percentage-wise, 49ers last year blitzed 18%. The Falcons blitzed 33%. It is aggressive. Like, they go after it and they generate. And you look at the rookie performance, the top two rookies in sacks were both Falcons players, James Pierce, and then you had Jaylon Walker. They were number one and number two in sack rate. Now, can Romello Height step in and replicate that? Now, last year was a really low sack number for rookies. 4.5 sacks for Jaylon Walker, a first round pick. I think most people would have been like, man, that's not really enough. But that's kind of the world we're in now. So I'll reflect this question to you on Romello Height. Over under 4.5 sacks. Like, do you think he hits that right at it or below?
I'm going to go over. I don't think it's going to be right, you know, like way over. I would say like 5 sacks is real legitimate for Romello Height this year, because there's going to be so much pressure generated in other spots. I think that he's going to get some one-on-one matchups, and his speed is a little bit deceptive, I think, for some of these offensive tackles where he kind of gets them to overset and works inside. I think Romello Height's going to have some opportunities, and I think as long as he can stay healthy, I think in a 17-game season, I think he gets 5 sacks for this 49ers football team, and I think that that would be welcomed, because I do think that he's going to be out there pretty much on every pass rush snap that they have, especially any third and longs.
Now, okay, I want to kind of nuance take here. I want to push back a little bit.
Okay.
Because right here, since she says, I love the aggressiveness. Will Kyle Shanahan allow Raheem Morris to blitz as much as he blitzed last year? We've seen Shanahan flip out, and we've heard him talk about, we really believe in bringing 4-man pressure. It limits the explosives on the back end, having 7 guys drop in coverage. You saw him freaking go nuts on Steve Wilks for trying to do. Now, Steve Wilks blitz, a little bit different than Raheem Morris blitz. There's a difference between bringing 7 and bringing 5. Will Shanahan allow a 33% blitz rate from a defense that he's the head coach of? Because I'm not sure he will.
I think he will if it's successful. That's the key. You know, the thing with Steve Wilks is it wasn't successful, right? I mean, Calvin Ridley scored a touchdown on a play that should have never, you know, happened. Those types of things, they make you as a coach second guess what your coordinator's doing, and then you have to get involved. But if they're successful and they're holding teams down, they're getting them to get rid of the ball quickly, Kyle Shanahan doesn't care, right? That's ultimately what it comes down to. Success is the key. He's the reason he keeps going back to the 4-man pressure is he saw it be successful. So if it works, then you're okay. But as long as those big explosives don't happen, he will absolutely be okay with it. In fact, he would, if he's like me as a coach, I'm like, oh, you want to blitz 100% of the time and it's going to work? Then do it. I don't care. As long as it works, get the football back to the offense. That's the key. I think that's how Kyle will feel. And I think he'll probably give a little bit more rope to Raheem Morris, because that's his guy, right? He trusts Raheem Morris a lot. So he'll give him an opportunity to kind of prove what he can do.
Steve Wilks, not his guy, was not his guy, had no, like, and you, how many times have we heard Kyle Shanahan say Raheem Morris, like, should be a head coach? Like, he's one of the best coaches in the league. Dude got arrested for him. You know what I mean? Like they've, yeah, it's what it is. Right here, last question from Brother Duck. He says, do you see Stribling becoming a full-time starter this year?
I don't think he's going to be a full-time starter this year. I think that he's going to have an opportunity to work in. I think they're going to have some key things for him initially. I look for the top 3 wide receivers to be Evans, Pearsall, and Kirk. And I think that they're going to kind of work Stribling in where they need a good matchup, where they like him, you know, even to block sometimes, but other times just to kind of take the top off the defense, whether that's playing X so it can free Mike Evans to move around a little bit, or if that's to kind of play that slot or Z role to kind of get some matchups that they like. But expect Stribling's snaps to go up as the season goes on, as he gets more acclimated to the offense, it gets a better feel for things. But I expect a package for Stribling as a part of this offense as early as week 1.
Yeah, I agree. And that's the thing. Different positions have different rotations, right? Left tackle, right tackle don't rotate. Corners don't rotate. Safeties don't rotate. Wide receivers rotate for every single team at every single position. So even though he's not a quote-unquote starter, you're talking about somebody that's going to get 20 to 30 plays a game. And that is efficient. Like, that is – so will he have the starter column? Will he be out there on the first snap? Probably not. Probably maybe 4 to 5 starts if you're just talking out there on the very first snap of the game. I don't think that is indicative to he's, you know, living up to where he was drafted or whatever. Wide receiver position is different. And understand this. He is going from the most elementary wide receiver system in all of college football to the most advanced wide receiver system in all of the NFL. There is a learning curve. The good news is DeShon Stribling has played for several different franchises, all versions of the Air Raid. Shout out Mike Leach. But like, it's going to take time. And Brock even said this in his interview yesterday. Once Stribling gets into the playbook and learns everything, it will be interesting to see. yeah, you can go out there and do routes on air. You run this route, I'm going to throw it, and we're just, you know, out there in shirt and shorts. That's one thing. Yeah, that's cool. For Kyle Shanahan offense, that wide receiver position is advanced calculus. It will take time. Yeah, the whatever, clickbait, whatever, they're going to have plenty of juice to go out there and say it was a waste early on and whatever. Don't listen to that crap. You are better. You're here. You already know that. It's going to take time. But that's why you signed Mike Evans and Christian Kirk. So you have the now, and then you have the upside of the later. And so he gets to grow into this role. I'm pretty excited. And, man, like, for Deshaun Stribling to step into this situation behind Mike Evans and behind Kirk and just learn, but still get the reps because he's going to. I'm more excited about the Stribling pick every single day. Every single day, I'm just like, and that's why he was an Ants elite, and that's why he was a Rush crush. Like, we're simpatico on the Deshaun Stribling love and fit. Maybe a little early than we both hope for, but, dude, I'm excited about this kid. I really am.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is he's got all the ability to be someone great. And he does all the dirty work too, right? This isn't just a flashy guy that runs verticals and can make plays down the field. He's a complete wide receiver. He's going to do all the dirty work, all the blocking. He's going to get yards after the catch. He's a complete wide receiver with the size to go with it. And so I think the 49ers are super excited about this. This isn't just an instant impact guy, but this is a guy that's going to be, you know, here for a long time. And the 49ers are hoping that he's going to become the next great wide receiver. So he's going to make some sort of an impact this season. There's going to be moments where we see Stribling make some explosive play, and we're going to be like, holy cow, look at what this guy could be. And then by the time we get to next year, we're going to be talking about the fact that Deshaun Stribling is going to be an absolute star in this league. That's what I believe. I think he's got all the tools. I think he's got the right mindset. I think in the long run, this is going to be a really dynamic pick for the 49ers.
I'm excited. Man, this is a fun show. And you are the man. I appreciate you not just being the beauty behind this podcast, but also the content. You are the best. That's going to do it for us today. You guys are incredible. And until next time, stay strong, faithful. We out.